Hi everyone, I am Adolfo Neto, a professor at the Federal University of Technology, Paraná, Curitiba, Brazil, and this is the Professor Adolfo Neto podcast. In this podcast, I interview professionals from the field of computing and related areas. Today, I'm delighted to have Peter Urich on the show, and Peter is the founder of Indie Courses and a senior Elixir engineer. He has a background in psychology, is a pragprog author, public speaker, and blogger. Peter is also an active X, formerly a Twitter user, which is where I found him, and he's passionate about software architecture, product engineering, and sharing knowledge. Peter, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for having accepted my invitation. Do you have anything to add to your presentation?
Oh, no, I think you nailed it. It was long enough, I think. Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
You're welcome. There's much more information about you in your website, but we won't have time to cover all of your adventures, even outside of work. But just a curiosity, where are you right now? Are you in the Netherlands and are you Dutch?
I am in the Netherlands, but I'm not Dutch. I'm German, German born, but I studied in the Netherlands. I came here for my psychology bachelor when I was 21. And I stayed for 6 years for the studies. Then I moved back to Germany for 3 years for my first jobs in software engineering. And then I realized that I like the Netherlands much better than Germany. So I came back and now I'm living in Leiden, which is south of Amsterdam. And it's been almost 3 years now that I live here.
Oh, that's great. So let's get to know you a bit better. So I saw in your LinkedIn that you have a bachelor's degree in psychology, as you said right now. And after that, you obtained a master's degree in software engineering and distributed systems. What sparked your interest in software engineering?
I always loved building things, not necessarily with software, but when I was a kid, I already built a lot of things with wood. I was into woodcraft. I built little sailing ships with ropes and sails and rudders and everything. That was pretty cool. And then when I got older, I still enjoyed building a lot of things. So actually my first study when I was 18, I went to university and I studied civil engineering. But I like building things. I don't like theorizing over how to build things. So when I studied civil engineering, the first year is so much math and so much statics, like how to get the bridge working. It was not like terribly boring, but I just realized that it was too theoretical. So eventually I decided to drop civil engineering. I went into psychology afterwards, and that is mostly due to, my interest with human nature. And that comes from my mom. I think my mom is a general practitioner, like a doctor. And she's been working for 40 years already with patients. And I grew up in a practice, basically. Like 2 weeks after I was born, I was lying in the corner on a blanket of the practice of my mom. And it's funny, when I go back home to my hometown, there's still older women who have seen me when I was like 3 months old. And they're still patients of my mom. So that's pretty nice. And anyway, but that, I have that interest for human nature and for helping people, and I mean, I was interested in medicine, but I think it's hard to get into medicine everywhere. I didn't have the best grades in school. So I looked around and I saw psychology, which is also, working with humans and everything. So I decided to do that, actually. So after my civil engineering 1 year test drive, so to say, I switched over to psychology and went to the Netherlands because it's easier to study psychology here than in Germany. And that's what I did for 3 years. And then I realized I still love building stuff. I love working with people, I love helping people, but I still just want to build things. I just want to have something, that I can say this is what I've built and it helped people or people use it. Yeah, so I always tinkered around with coding a little bit, like ever since I was 14, 15. I mean, I had a computer ever since I'm like 9 or so. So I was playing games, and there was still like the time where you had the dial-up modem. So you had to kind of understand technology to a certain level. Also back then, we still had the floppy disks where you installed Windows with. So my dad actually, he had to reinstall Windows every 2 weeks because I destroyed it completely. So I always worked with computers, and I always wanted to build stuff with it, but I never really got the entry to it. I never got like a first Hello World project, you know, where I could say, this is how I build things. And so I always tinkered around with it, but then only in the last years of my bachelor of psychology, I met a friend of my girlfriend at the time, and he was a professional software developer with .NET. And yeah, he took me under his wing. I could ask him any question. You know, there was no stupid question, really. So I asked him, you know, I want to write the script. I want to scrape the entire website of our university and see whether there are any 404 links anywhere. Because as a student, whenever I had to look for documentation on the university's website, I got frustrated because I clicked the link to a very important document, and then the document was 404. It was not there. And that upset me so much that I went to my friend and said, hey, I want to write a script that looks for all these links and checks them. And he helped me do that. We wrote it in PHP back then. It worked. I found like 50 broken links. I actually reported all of that to the IT team at the university. They didn't care one bit. I didn't even get a response back. I guess, you know, they also had a lot of computer science students, and probably every second week they got a request like that. But that was one of the first projects where I realized, hey, this is cool. Like I have an idea. I want to do something. I want to build something, and I just need the tools to build it. Yeah. So eventually I realized, yeah, I want to go into computer science or like software engineering, really. And in the Netherlands, you have that chance if you do, so we have 3 years of the bachelor. And in the last half year of the bachelor, you can choose any course in the entire university, really. So like there are some limitations. You can't do medicine, you know, stuff like that. But I could just go and take software engineering courses and just enroll for them. And I had to pass them, you know, to get my grades and my credit points. But yeah, this was for me a great chance of just trying it out, just, you know, taking 6 courses. And the great thing is the first courses I took were actually called Software Engineering 1 and 2. And these were like, there were 2 courses in like 2 semesters, so like one big course really over half a year. And this was the best course I ever had, because it simulated a real-world software project, where you had a team of engineers. We were a team of 10 engineers, and we had a real world customer. Like there was a local businessman, you know, who had a business in town, and he needed an app actually. So we were working with a real stakeholder, building a real world application, all of that. And I came into that course. That was my first. And I realized, well, I can't code, but what I can do is like manage people. You know, I can be kind of a little bit the project manager, the team leader, so to say. And I did that. I took over a team of 10 people, so me and 9 others. And we eventually had the best grade in the entire course, you know, because it just worked well. I also looked at, you know, every single little developer and what their strengths and weaknesses are. And then I tried to position them. So I don't know, intuitively, I just got it right. But that showed me that software engineering is so much more than just writing super complex algorithms in C. You know, that's usually the impression that people get when they start at university. And also with us, the first year is just hardcore C programming, you know, like data structures and algorithms. And yeah, I came from the practical side. You know, I came from the angle where I thought, well, yeah, great C and super fast algorithms, but how can I build a website? How can I do a distributed system? And that's why I decided eventually, okay, this is something I'm interested in. This is something I want to pursue. And because of my university allowed me to switch from the bachelor eventually to the master in software engineering, I decided to do that. And yeah, those, I had two great years. I learned a lot. I had great professors. I still am friends with some of them. And yeah, that was my whole story from being a young kid to finishing a master in software engineering.
It was at TU Delft, right?
No, that was the University of Groningen.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Yes.
That's in the north of the Netherlands.
And what was the course in English?
Yes. Everything, my bachelor in psychology, the master in software engineering, everything was in English. The Netherlands are really, really big on having international students. It, like, right now, it's a little bit of a debate, you know, because they don't want to have that many foreign students anymore. But like for hundreds of years, they always had international and foreign students and also researchers here. So that's how they really became one of the knowledge bases in the world.
And when did you become first involved with Elixir? Because you told your story about PHP, and so in a certain point of your life, you discovered Elixir. When was that?
That was with my very first job, actually, after university. So I finished university 2018, I think, like summer of 2018. And then I decided to not get a job right away. I actually did a whole motorcycle trip through the eastern coast of Africa. Like, I started in Egypt and rode all the way down to South Africa. That took half a year. And then when I came back, I moved back to Germany. I wanted to say my first job, which I got in Germany, it actually was a Python job. Like, I applied to be a Python developer because I've been doing a lot of Python coding. I've been part of the Python community for 2 years. Back then, I also gave a talk in Sweden about software patterns or design patterns in Python. I think it's still one of the most watched videos about design patterns, actually, which is pretty cool. And yeah, but then I got the job and I was a Python developer officially. But from day one, they put me on Elixir projects. And I was quite critical about that back in the day, because I thought, well, it's my first job. I'm going to probably work in it like a year, two or three. And that's going to be the groundwork, like the foundation of my career. So if I choose a language that is so niche, like Elixir, you know, can I actually get a job after that? Or am I like stuck with this company forever now? And well, funny enough, I only worked at that company for half a year because it was not a very great company. And then I was on the job market after 6 months, and I looked around and there were two other companies in town that used Elixir, and I applied to both of them. And luckily enough, I got an offer with one, which is more like there was summertime and the other company couldn't get back to me early enough. So I joined the other company and I worked there for 2 years and grew from junior to senior. And that was a great time as well. But so what I wanted to say is, like, back then already, I thought Elixir, is it too niche, is it not? And it turned out it is not that niche after all. You can still find jobs if you look for them. And I must say also that because I chose this language, I think that I could progress much faster, because it teaches you so many things about distributed computer, like distributed systems, you know, high level things that in other languages are not really covered, and they're just built into Elixir and you just have to learn them, you know. So I think it's a really good language to get started because it's easy, but then very quickly you get exposed to these more advanced topics, and you know, you can either dive into them, try to understand them, or you ignore them. It's fine either way. But if you choose to dive into them, then you will actually progress much faster as an engineer, I think.
And now let's talk about Indie Courses. You created Indie Courses. What is it and why did you create it?
Yeah. So Indie Courses is a video course platform for indie creators. And I built it and I launched it like 2 months ago, end of January. And I built it because last year I created my very first video course. And it was called, or it's still called, Build an MVP with Elixir. And the angle here is, you know, take beginners of coding and also beginners of Elixir and teach them how to create an application, deploy it, you know, have some continuous deployment in place, how to add payments with Lemon Squeezy. So teach you everything that you need to know to build a product and to deploy it and to actually get paying customers with it. And that was the goal of the video course. And yeah, I launched it last year around this time as well. And I had a problem finding a platform where I can host the video course, because there are many, many out there, but a lot of them, they focus more on the high end, like on professional educators that want to have like an online community and certifications and quizzes and drip lessons and everything. And then on the other side, you have very basic, well, not basic, but you have Udemy, basically. Udemy is the other, the biggest player on the market. And they're fine, but also there's like, they take 2/3 of your profits when they sell your video course. If you have an affiliate link and people buy it, then you get 97% basically all of it, which is great. But most of your sales come through the marketplace. So like for me, I didn't want to sell my video course there because I wanted to make some money with it, you know? So yeah, eventually I settled on Gumroad because they were the only platform where I had 10% fees. Effectively, they were like 12.5% because the Gumroad tricks a little, like all of them trick a little bit with how they calculate transaction fees. But I settled on Gumroad, and Gumroad was the only platform that allowed video streaming right on the platform. Like if you use something like Lemon Squeezy, people can buy the course, but then they have to download the course to the local computer and watch it there. And I didn't want to have that. I want to have at least like basic streaming. So I chose Gumroad, but then I realized they don't have all these features that I want. They don't have student commons. They don't have auto transcriptions. You know, they don't have like optimized video streaming for mobile and other devices. Anyway, I decided eventually I need to have my own video course platform. And that's what I built last year for like 7 months, 8 months. And this year in February, in end of January, I launched it. And yeah, it's my full-time job. I mean, I have a three-day-a-week freelance gig to pay my bills, but all the other days I'm working full-time on indie courses. So yeah, it's been a great ride so far.
So if someone wants to create a course and publish on indie courses, is that person just has to go to the website and they have the instructions there? Or are you still in a phase where you are personally selecting who can publish courses there?
No, anybody who has a video course can publish. I mean, I will check it that it's, you know, legal and like we can't offer adult material, for example, that kind of stuff. But if you have a video course, just, you know, the videos, it's basically the, you know, you could also go to YouTube and upload the same on YouTube, but then you wouldn't get paid for it. So, you know, instead of that, you can go to indie courses, just upload your videos there, sell them, make, you know, a couple of $1,000 if you can. And it should be as easy as using YouTube. I don't have that many instructions yet for how to create a video course. However, for that, there's a great video course out there by Aaron Francis, and it's called screencasting.com. So if you look for screencasting.com, it's like a $250 video course, but it's worth every single cent. Like that will teach you how to create really high quality video courses. And once you have that video course, you can go to indie courses and sell it there.
Okay. And before creating indie courses, you already told us that you created a video course, built an MVP with Elixir, and you also wrote a short book, Building Table Views with Phoenix Live View. How did that experience help you in creating indie courses?
Yeah, the book especially, it showed me that there is not that much money in writing books, unfortunately. And that's something that many authors have told me. Like if you write a book, it's more for your own reputation. It's not for making bank. Although there are exceptions, no question about it. But I would say if just anybody writes a book, sure, you can make a couple of thousands with it, but you won't get rich. So I like writing. Actually, it's a love-hate relationship. I hate writing, but I also love it at the same time. I hate because sometimes I get into this perfectionistic mode where I just like double read every single word that I just wrote. And that is really, really tiring. But sometimes also it just flows. And that is the moments where I love it. So I decided, you know, to step up my game from writing blog posts to writing a full book. Well, I mean, it's a small book, like 60 pages, 65. But I wanted to give it a try to see how the experience is. And it's not terrible, but it's not for me, honestly. Like I rather like to talk, as you might, you know, experience already. I like to educate with my hands and gestures and, you know, all this. So, and that is also much easier for me. Like I can just create a 10-minute video in, you know, 10 minutes and then edit it in half an hour. And if I would write the stuff that I wanted to teach, it would take me a couple of hours at least. So I rather prefer a video. And yeah, so that experience led me to writing the book, led me to the decision to create a video course. And I did that, yeah, around this time last year. It took me 2 months approximately. And I could have done it faster, but I took a lot of time to write the code that I wanted to present. And then the extra recording and editing, that was like, I really pushed it, but it's been 2 weeks, approximately 3 weeks, maybe. So like 5, 6, 7 recording days, and then 2 or 3 editing days. Yeah. Well, and that's it really. I mean, if you, you know, add that up within a month, with some hard work, you can, I mean, I created a 6.5-hour course. That's a very long course as well. You could probably, you know, just take like 4 or 5 days, like a long weekend, and then create a 2-hour course, for example, if you're prepared. Yeah, so that's why I created my video course. And then my experience of launching the video course and like creating it and launching it, that gave me the experience that I needed to, well, that actually showed me that there is a need for a platform like Indie Courses in the market.
And what are the next steps for Indie Courses, or at least the ones that you can tell us a little bit about?
Yeah, the funny thing with creating a startup like this is, like people tell you in the beginning, nothing happens, and then slowly the speed picks up, and eventually it will overwhelm you. Like when I launched Indie Courses, I thought, it's feature complete. Like you don't need more features than what I've built in the MVP, right? You can sell a video course, everything's fine. Well, then the real world happened, and actually people started using it, which I'm incredibly grateful for. And you know, they came with feature requests, and these feature requests, they were good. And then I thought, damn it, I have to, you know, keep on working. And now I have a huge backlog of things, like big topics that I need to tackle in the next couple of weeks or months. So I would say what's next is just, you know, extend the foundation, the features on the bottom. So that includes discount codes so that you can run marketing campaigns. I also want to experiment with AI a little bit. Let's see how useful it is. You know, you can feed the transcription of the full transcription of a video course to ChatGPT or something, and then students can actually ask questions and get answers. But I don't know how useful it is, to be honest, because the output you get is only as useful as the input. So when people ask a specific question, they will get an answer. But I don't think these courses have super proprietary knowledge that ChatGPT doesn't have, to be honest. So I'm not sure. I have to experiment with it. If it makes sense, then I will add it. But there are also many, many low-hanging fruits, like just searching through the entire transcript. You know, that is something that very few other platforms have. But I myself, as a video course creator, sometimes I need to find a specific part in my video course that I need to replace. And, you know, I don't want to go through 30 videos and search exactly for the one that I look for. So for myself already, I want to have a transcription, like a search thing. And that is something like a basic feature that many other platforms don't implement. Sorry. So the big picture is basically like just add the features that people request and then see what happens after.
And I suppose that for your own video course, you had to edit yourself, or maybe did you pay an editor?
No, I edited everything with ScreenFlow. And if you want to create a video course, one of the investments I can highly recommend is the ScreenFlow, it's called. and it is just made for screencasting. That's, you know, what you call when you have a video, like a monitor, and you record the monitor, and then maybe your face is like in the corner somewhere. ScreenFlow is the best application for that. You don't need anything else. So yeah, ScreenFlow, and that's how I edited it.
So my question is related, somehow related to that, is that and this question is about my, let me just change here. Okay.
Yeah. That's cool.
Is related to my interests as a researcher. I like to ask people, how do you stay up to date or updated with the news in your fields? For instance, you had to learn something. Do you read books? Are there books, for instance, for someone who wants to create an online course? But do you read books? Do you read blog posts? Do you search for podcasts, YouTube, online courses? What do you do usually?
Yeah, a little bit of everything, to be honest. Depends on the topic. So for software engineering, particularly, like the news, the up-to-date news, I'm on Twitter. So basically every news, like every new thing that came out, like I will see it over there, especially in the Elixir space, because I think it's still more or less the best place to communicate with other Elixirists. The second one being Elixir Forum, but I'm not that often on Elixir Forum, to be honest. So for Elixir, it's just following Twitter, reading the blog posts that people write. I love reading blog posts. And honestly, there's so many, like, you wouldn't believe how short a blog post can be and how valuable it can be. Like, people think, oh, you know, I need to write these big 2,000-word blog posts and only then I can publish. No. The other day, I read a blog post that was like two paragraphs. And actually, it could have been one paragraph. And it just showed how to change a setting in Flowkey, which is the HTML parsing library for live view testing. So when you do live view tests and then you get some HTML back and you want to see that there's a certain string in that HTML, or you want to like select an element and then look for the text, you use Flowkey basically. And Flowkey does a thing where it escapes HTML when it passes the HTML. So if you have a name like Oh Harry, like O and then a dot or dash Harry, it will escape that. It will like make an ampersand 59, whatever. And if you assert against that in your test, like you say, hey, this sentence, this HTML should have the name, you know, Oh Harry, it will fail. So there is a setting, and it's not documented by Flowkey. It's just in the code somewhere. And it actually disables the escaping. And that means that what you get back, the text that you get back from Flowkey is, you know, still O dash Harry, on a dash, but an apostrophe. Anyway, so it gives you back exactly how you see it on the browser. And that way your test won't be flaky, because if you have random names, you know, sometimes you have these special characters which are then escaped. So that was the main source of flakiness in my tests, this particular little configuration. And I didn't know about it for 3 years. And every single time that my test failed, I was like, oh, there needs to be a solution for this. And then somebody wrote a very small blog post, like two paragraphs about it. And I read it and I was like, this just changed my world, really. Yeah. Sorry, long story about the small little thing. But I just wanted to encourage people, if you have a small little thing that you learn, you know, during your day, like, hey, you just learned how to, you know, fix this, for example. Just write it on your blog post, just like a small little 1-2 paragraph thing, publish it, bam, and then let Google indexing does the rest and Twitter, the algorithm of Twitter. Sorry, long story about that. I wanted to say for software engineering, yes, Twitter, blog posts, Elixir forum. Also, there are many, many good books if you want to dive into topics like software engineering, software architecture, software design. There are a lot of like enterprise patterns by something. Patterns of Enterprise Application Architecture is always a good book. And there's also one, they are just called Software Architecture. It's recently came out. There's also one about domain-driven design, a new one that came out 2 years ago. Like, these are all great books if you want to get started with like higher level, bigger picture software architecture topics. Yeah. So that's about software engineering, really. Yeah. Because I'm currently a business owner and startup founder, I needed to learn a lot about other things than engineering, like marketing and product positioning, pricing. There are tons of good books out there. And if you dive into like how to create a startup, there will be the same suggestions for books. And like one of them is the Mom Test. If you start your product, like the Mom Test is a book that explains to you how you can validate your idea. You know, is it too complicated? Is it simple enough so that customers can understand it or not? The Mom Test to get started. Then you have Traction is great for marketing, because I didn't even know how many channels of marketing exist. You know, what can you do to get people see your product basically? So Traction is a good one. And then you get the one-page marketing plan, which is a good one for creating your marketing strategy. Just want to say there are many, many good books out there. That's how I learned about these. So a little bit of everything. YouTube, one last thing. If you want to go into SEO, because if you want to do marketing, you want to write content, and then you want to have high-ranking content on Google, the Ahrefs YouTube channel, it is amazing. It will give you all the foundations, all the information you need to start creating content that is kind of targeted at both your own customers, but also at the larger audience, so that you get new customers that way too. Sorry, now I'm going to shut up a little bit.
No, that's okay. Many great links to several kinds of content. So thank you, Peter. Thank you for sharing your experience and insights. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
Not really. You can, well, you know, if you want to follow me, like I'm on Twitter, PJ Ulrich. My personal blog is at peterulrich.com. I haven't really written a lot of blog posts in the last 2 months. I'm sorry for that. I have a long, long list of topics, but I just don't have the time. And otherwise, if you have any video courses you would like to sell, indiecourses.com is my startup. And I will be at ElixirConf Europe in Lisbon in a month or so. So if you're there, you know, shoot me a tweet or just walk up to me, and I'm glad to say hi to you.
Thank you again, Peter. And a big thank you to all our listeners for joining us today. We appreciate your time and attention. Until next time, goodbye.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.
If you are curious and ready to take your Elixir language skills to the next level, check out my affiliate link to the ELX Pro course in the episode description.